Hello, everyone. I have a really sore throat. So I don't know how long the talking will go on, but nice to be here. I was not here last week. Don't know how many of you were here last week, but I missed it, so it's nice to be back. And we don't have so many Mondays left of our season until we break for the summer. So it's nice to be here. Like I said, I have a sore throat. I have cough. I have bronchitis. I mean, just everything you can imagine. All coming from my little tiny grandson. But germs. Don't they're not big or small depending on the size of the body that they land in. So he's been sick too, so and everyone around him. In any case, that's just part of my container for at the moment. We say, you know. When you're sick, be sick. When you're not, don't be sick. When you're healthy, be healthy. And we're always a little bit healthy and a little bit sick all the time. You know, we have this idea that dualities are separate, but in fact, it's like a spectrum. So there's different degrees of sickness and health, and they cross over. And same thing with all the dualities, good and bad, dead and alive, big and small. And that's helpful to keep in mind that there's also a part of me that's perfectly healthy today. And there's all, even when I feel like I'm perfectly healthy, there's a part of me that's sick. So, this weekend there was a gathering of all the teachers in the White Plum lineage. There was gatherings in various places that used to be when it was a smallish group. There would be an annual gathering in one place, and everyone would travel there. But little by little, the group has grown to such that even in the past. I can't remember what year we did it at Donna. We hosted it at Donna and at my house. You know, maybe 2010 or 11, something like that. And it was relatively small. There were like 25 people. Of course, not everyone came, but it was manageable. Now there are, you know, I don't know how many, more than 200 teachers in the lineage. And, so it's just impossible to get, and it's all over Europe and all over the United States. And so to have a one place gathering is really impossible. So it's held in different places. So there were one, two, there were two, there was a place in the Netherlands, there was a place in the UK, and there was a place in Ireland that were hosting meetings. And then there were two places in the US. On the West Coast. And then on Friday and on Saturday, they had a Zoom, there was a Zoom session open for anyone else who wanted to join, who couldn't be in person but could join. And on the Friday, it was, they always organize these meetings around the anniversary of Mizumi Roshi's death. And so it was anniversary of his death, and they had a ceremony. That was filmed, that was on direct, you know, on Zoom. I did not attend. I couldn't on Friday, but then on Saturday they had the new members presented themselves. So there were a few new members who were present because there's always a ceremony for new members. And then they discussed, they each site gave us a breakdown of what they had discussed during the 2 days, because they had meetings and workshops during the days. And the questions were, how do we feel that we're carrying on Maizumi Roshi's legacy in the 21st century, in the modern times? And if there was time, it was what are our criteria for giving transmission? And there were all of us who were not at the meetings were also invited to reflect on these questions, and if we wanted to share something, we could. So it was fascinating to hear what the groups had discussed and come up with. Each site gave a roundup and outline of what they discussed. And then there really wasn't time for any of the rest of us to participate, but it was fine. I think we all were happy just to hear what everyone else had to say. And most of the people present in all of these places, and there was only one, no, there were two successors of Maizumi Roshi who were online. One is at her monastery, was one of the sites. The other one was online. Otherwise, everyone else was subsequent res generations. So it's really the younger generation, and I say young in terms of not so much in terms of age, but in terms of succession in the lineage. There are people who are the equivalent of me who have successors, and their successors probably have, well, maybe not. But Joa was at one of the meetings. He was at the meeting in the Netherlands. So it was really, amazing to see how it's being carried on and to hear what people had to say. None of it was terribly surprising. A lot of it was, we can understand, but some of the things people said were, the groups had looked at, well, so what distinguishes Maizumi Roshi Zen from other types of Zen? And that was an interesting reflection. The Dublin people I found the most enlightening, and I had hoped to go to their site, but I had been traveling so much since January that I just could not add another trip. And it would have meant flying. I didn't want to fly again. And I couldn't do it, but because I really liked those people and I loved what they had to say. And one of the things that they said was that it was two women who were both successors of a successor of Bernie. And they said, which is this is a common thing we hear, that their burning commitment to practice, to sitting, to sesshin, the burning commitment that they had that kept them coming and going and through years and years and years of practice and doing whatever it took, wherever they had to go, that they don't see so often in the people around them. And they had in their group, they discussed this, and other people kind of felt the same way. And when I heard that, I thought, maybe this is just some weird thing that we have, because I think most teachers feel that way. But I think it's that we don't realize. Or we're expecting someone else's practice to look like ours or something. And we have to like make this leap of faith and just believe in the truth of each person's practice, however it manifests. I mean, this is my words. This is not what they said. They said, and they're very, the Irish are so poetic and such a clever use of the English language. And they said that they had come to the conclusion that you don't need to plow the same field twice, which is a common expression we say in English, that you plow the field, but you don't have to plow that same field twice. So that expecting someone else's practice to be like yours, or like you felt yours was, you don't need that. You don't, that field has already been plowed. You already did that. And that they had come to the conclusion, or the within themselves, to be confident in the Dharma's evolution, and that it will find its, this is a quote, the Dharma will find its forms in our response to those who come to our door. That's absolutely beautiful, you know, because that's really what it is. You just respond to the situation. You respond to those who are there, who come. This is not to say that anything is watered down. This is not to say that we lose the essence, or we lose sight of the essence, but we're not attached to a certain way of how that essence needs to be expressed, or needs to the forms in which it takes shape or something. It's just, it will find its forms in our response to those who come to our door. Beautiful, you know. And this Irish group had reached out to me some time ago when they one of the women was giving transmission for the first time. I think it was last year. And she had heard that we had, that the French people had French Dharma names. And she wanted to know if that was true and how that came about. And I said, well, it was my teacher who just, because nobody spoke Japanese, there was no point to give Japanese Dharma names. And so she just gave names in English and in French. And so this woman, Miriam, took this as an okay to give Dharma names in Irish, in not in English even, in Irish, right? She was asking me what I thought of that, and I said, go for it, you know, it's, there's no reason that you have to give it in English, you know. And so they said that is also part of how they are, how the continuing Mizumi Roshi's legacy takes that form for them. And she also said, for this is no surprise for us, but she said they translated the vows into Irish as well. And everyone on the screen thought this was really amazing and everything. And I didn't raise my hand and say, well, you know, 30 years ago we translated them into French, and since then we translate them into Portuguese. And sometimes in the morning we say one round in English, one round in French, and one round in Portuguese, you know. I didn't say that, but they, you know, this was their way of saying, because they think of themselves as a colonized people. You know, they were colonized by the English and were forced to take on this language that is not theirs, English. And this was a way of returning to their truth, which they saw as continuing Mizumi Roshi's legacy, you know. And they were also trying to, they looked into how transmission, the equivalent of transmission ceremonies, occur in the old Irish traditions, you know, of folk traditions, or pagan practices and things, and what how the transmissions take form, you know. And among them was that there was always a part of it that was outside of any ceremony, was always outside. It always involved a stick and usually some element of fire and water and plants, you know. Well, this is very close to what our transmissions involve, not necessarily outside. That element does not, but there's a stick, there's fire, there's water, there's a plant, very similar. So they took that on and are trying to integrate some of the Irish traditions into their transmission ceremonies. That, now I won't go into what the other centers said, because I found this one the most inspiring and the one that was closest to how I feel about the Dharma and how we practice. So As you know, we basically do this. The Dharma finds its forms in our response to those who come to our door, or our response to the door that we walk through. So the place where we find ourselves practicing, and the people that we find there, then that's the form comes from that. An odd, really strange thing, and I told some people in the study group, I think it was, in the past week, I've had these dreams where I'm like talking about the Dharma in my dreams, and this never happens to me. I really never have this kind of thing. And it's always like in the two that I could think of, and I told the one in the study group the other day. Wasn't it in the study group, Debbie, where I told that dream? Yeah. Juan was there too, yeah. So I'll just repeat it because I'm mentioning it. But so I was in my workplace, my former workplace, the newsroom of the newspaper where I used to work. And of course, I haven't been there for 8 years. It doesn't exist anymore. And, I've kind of forgotten everything I knew about it. But as suddenly there I was, and I was responsible for some section of the paper, which happened to be the sports section. And I had to go to into the news meeting, in the meeting where all the editors get together and decide what will go into the paper, and especially what will be on the front page. And so each section editor is supposed to say, well, this is what we have, this is what I recommend. And I just had no clue. I was trying to get it all together. I didn't even know how to present the information, and I had no clue. And they were waiting for me. And this editor kept coming out of the office looking and saying, we're waiting for you, Amy, we're waiting for you. So finally, I just went and said, well, I'll just improvise, you know. And I came in and I started kind of, my turn came and I started kind of talking. And I said, oh, yeah, and there's this story about baseball, but I'm not so familiar with it. Maybe somebody else knows something about it, you know, and you could elaborate or something. And nobody said anything except this one, I say a kid, he was like a young guy. He was like probably 23 or something, 25 maximum. Sitting kind of across from me in a cir on the circle, and he stands up and he said, I'll tell you. And he points at the chair he was sitting in, and he said, this chair is an expression of the Dharma. And I didn't miss a beat. I stood up and I said, no, you are the Dharma. And everyone kind of looked around and was like, is she talking about? Or it was either, oh, here she goes talking about the Dharma. You know, it was something like, what? And then the kid said, well, what about you? And I said, I too am the Dharma. And then there was a pause and I said, don't talk to me about the Dharma. And sat back down. And that's the part I regret in the dream, is that I said, don't talk to me about the Dharma. But there was this thing of, you know, like cutting through the duality of this chair is expressing the Dharma to you are the Dharma, right? And then, like last night, I had some similar, I don't remember the details, but something similar about Dharma and oneness, something. So there's something going on for me. I don't know what it is, but, and it spoke to me. Therefore, within that context, these comments from these Irish women spoke to me, you know, this really, you know, I think they started out something like, you know, Zen is life, it is our lives, or something, you know. So, which, you know, is it's you are the Dharma, you know, it's well, and which makes total sense with my Dharma name, Thiruvengadha, right? So you're that. And so I think that every time we start finding ourselves moving away, trying to find something else, trying to find some explanation, trying to situate ourselves, you know, in the spectrum of where are we in this, whether it's in our workplace, in our family, in our practice, it's really just come back to right here. This is where you are. This is it. There's no one else. There's nothing else you have to be. It's like that in the sayings of Joshu. There's a whole book of sayings of Joshu, and they're all kind of similar. One of them, there's this monk who asks, what are the words of the ancients or something? What are the words of the ancients? So what did the ancient people say? What did the ancient teachers say? And Joshu says, listen carefully, listen carefully. It's so close that we miss it. There's not like some other words we have to listen to. Right here, or that koan we have of listening, the tree whistle, the wind whistling in the pines, hearing it closer, the sound is better. Just closer, 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 closer. We don't have to look somewhere else. We don't have to look for forms somewhere else, or even approving of changing the language of the Dharma names or something. I'm happy that they just authorized themselves to do it. They said something when they said this in the meeting yesterday or Saturday. They said, yes, we talked to our French Dharma brothers and sisters, and they to explain to us. And so we said, well, nobody of the higher ups did anything about it, so we figured we could do it too. That's true, because nobody would do anything. Nobody would cares, Nobody, everyone, that's part of the beauty of our lineage, is that, And someone from who is from ZCLA, the actual, the mother temple, that was one of the things she said that they had discussed, was that Maizumi Roshi's Zen was, of course, koan study and social action, no self, compassion, all these kinds of things, but also don't be stuck on form, which liberates us to trust that the forms will emerge from our response to those who come through the door. So if those who come through the door and those who are meeting them are Irish, trust that giving those Irish names and chanting the vows in Irish are, that's it. That's the Dharma expressing itself right there. That is the Dharma. It's not even the Dharma expressing itself. That is the Dharma. And someone else, that person from ZCLA, said another thing of Maizumi Roshi's was relax sharply. Wonderful, relax sharply. So it's like, relax. Don't be caught. Don't be stuck. Don't be fixed. But right here, don't lose a drop. That's so empowering and so powerful, that as a message, And I was happy to hear that, because I feel like that's what was transmitted to me too. So somehow that transmission got from Maizumi Roshi to his successor, and from his successor to his successor to me, right? So and that, I find that really inspiring. Kind of reinvigorating, kind of like, oh yes, of course. So sometimes I just forget what I'm doing. I know when it's appropriate or not, I feel it, but I forget. So it's good to be reminded, to hear other people say it and then come back to it. Something they all, like, the initial question was like, how is Maizumi Roshi's family style Zen transmitted today in your sanghas or something? And I'm not really, I still don't really know what they meant by family style. I have to kind of sit with that, I think, because I don't know what that meant. Maizumi Roshi was not good as a family man, so he was not good with his kids and his wife, and he just wasn't there because he was doing his family style Zen somewhere else. But I don't know. I don't know what that means, family style Zen. It's an intriguing one, though. Someone from the Dutch group said that for them, family style was meant belonging to a family, and that the sangha and the practice And the relationship with the teacher was part of that belonging to a family and very ordinary. That not it was not something extraordinary. So I suppose that's one way of interpreting family style. I don't know. My throat is kind of getting worn out, so if others would like to share or ask questions or speak about something else or that, whatever, what comes up for you around it.
This is a very interesting questioning for me because I'm now my facts are fuzzy, but it seems to me that Philip Kaplow was a Zen teacher coming to the United States, that I'm pretty sure. He was American, and when he translated something, I don't know if it was the Heart Sutra or something, his Japanese teacher said, "I'm no longer your teacher. You have to do it the traditional way." And I know that had I been around them, I would have had to leave because we're told that Zen is like water and it adapts to the banks of the river. And then if you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way. And I couldn't take that. So I find it kind of odd that they're asking that question. And at the same time, it's true that Irish being where it is in relationship to English, maybe they feel kind of guilty to speak their own language. But yeah, I think this is really important. At least it is for me.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, that story of Kaplow. It was Yasutani Roshi who was his teacher. And I think they had probably had other disagreements about things, but that was the last straw. And Kaplow said, "No, I mean this is how it needs to be transmitted in the West. We can't go on with Japanese, you know." So, yep, that's true.
And that was one of the things that made me feel kind of funny about Deshi Moro, is they kept saying, "Oh yes, you just recited in Japanese. It doesn't matter that you don't understand." And I learned the whole thing in Japanese, I remember. It doesn't matter that you don't understand it. The understanding will come through, I don't know, osmosis or something like that. I don't know about that. I'm a language teacher.
No, I don't know, Bart, do you have things translated in Dutch or not? I know Tenke does not, but
Well, we use translations of several text sutras for the Nil, for Oyoki, for the relative and absolute, the Hearts Sutra. Yes, everything is translated into Dutch, and I think it was done by Frank Sensei at the time. What I found interesting, if I may speak about that a little bit more, about translating. So when I don't know when it was, but at a certain moment, I was thinking about the koans we were doing, the first set of koans especially, which is in English, which is passed through in English. And I found this to be maybe a hurdle for some who are not into English that much and who find it difficult to work with it. And somehow, well, these koans need to be, they have to speak to you in the first place. And these texts, they can be translated. So I started just translating for myself. And it was quite interesting to do it. I learned a lot of it. And I learned a lot more of it, much more, when I talked about this translation with Michel Sensei and others. Jeroen and Malik also helped. So we had a team formed. And it was really interesting to translate. It became our own form. And it's a good experience.
So now do people use that, the translation for the list, or?
Yes, they do.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, I know Geno Roshi always encouraged French people to translate it into French. And Corinne was supposed to have done it years and years and years and years and years and years and years ago, and she's never did it. I've told Portuguese people to do it too. A couple of, some people when they're working on the koan, I say translate it into Portuguese so that you, so it's different for you. You can't recite it to me in Portuguese, but translate it so that, like you say, you feel it differently and there's a different experience of it. And I don't know if people have kept those, it would be great if somebody did it. Some of them may already exist because they come from other collections. I don't know if you found that when you were translating, Bart, that there's already co collect these collections may be already translated into Dutch. The Mumin Khan and Hikigen Rokko and things maybe are already translated, and you could just pick it up and put it in there. I don't know.
I think the Mumin Khan certainly is translated into Dutch. And Michel, I think Michel, it was Michel who said it's not a good translation. Actually, it's a bad translation. And that can happen. It can be
Sure.
translated by people who have certain ideas about it. And well, they think maybe their intent is good, but it gets lost.
Yeah,
Too
that's true.
much.
That's true.
Still, all these texts are have been translated from, well, probably Chinese, most of them, to other languages and Japanese for certain, and English. So a lot of it already got lost, and already of it again got new meaning and new meanings as well. So it's also a richness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello, good evening, everyone. What you said, Roshi, was I found it very interesting because with the whole experience of this finding the Dharma finding its own ways in response to taking all these different forms. I've always found I've spoken with a couple of people about this over the years. You really see throughout the years this flavor of Zen that we have been practicing with you with Wildflower. You really see it going to the heart of the present moment. I've seen that over the years. It's not always that clear, but yeah, this how do you say the word? This underlining this I cannot find the word now. This underlining of the now here in the now. How is it right now? What it is? And I'm talking about dealing with bureaucratic, if many times it has been, talking about dealing with bureaucratic day-to-day stuff of the association, for example. It's something that we need to figure out how to do or how to approach something that needs to be that need to think about and we need to do. And over the years, it's interesting because, and I have expressed it like that, and other people have as well, you know. Yeah, you really trace it back to this flavor of Zen that we practice with wildflower. So that's very, yeah, it's very interesting.
Can you give an example to make it more clear?
I guess I could. So when we were going to Naturena, for instance, and we went there for a couple of years, and then last time we went there, it was really difficult to find to have the you know to have the number of people we needed to have to make it work and all of that. And so, and then we were faced with, okay, so how are we going to do this next summer? How are we going to do this? And so there were all these there were so there were some characteristics of the place which was they were really, you know, appealing. We could have It's great to have the number of people that we can have there. It's reasonably easy access. But we were faced with this very real difficulty in terms of money, because it was quite expensive. We had money, and we had money like put in there. And we tried to work with the people who were responsible for that place, you know, because we were trying to go not so early, because people are still working. But then if we go later, it's still high season. It's already high season. So there were all these, what I mean is there were all these different aspects that we needed to think about and to take into account. And the experience for me was really very much, you know, what do we have? What conditions do we really have that we need to work with? And we need to decide something considering that. And for me, it was really, I really felt, you know, I really felt myself always coming back to like this reality, this very close reality of what the conditions we had and that we needed to consider in order to make a decision. We needed to decide how we're going to do. Ultimately, that's what you needed to do. And so, and thinking what was appropriate, and so, you know, thinking about the group, the participants as a whole. So yeah, I don't know if it's a, I don't know if it's a very good example, but this is what came up.
But it's true that we always, in order to respond to a situation, we have to take into account all the ingredients. So that, you know, that's finding our forms in response to the people who walk in our door. But it's not always easy because, so to come back to your example of Naturena, we loved Naturena. It was a perfect place. It was wonderful. Everybody loved it. Swimming pool, lots of space, lots of room for lots of people. And but the constraints were that we couldn't go the week we wanted. It was a lot of money. We had to reserve the whole place. even if we didn't fill it up, we had to pay for the whole place. It was getting more and more expensive. So when we looked at, we had to let go of our attachment to our desire and see things as they are and say, oh, this is not appropriate. This doesn't work for us, you know. Our hand was forced because we really didn't have enough people to even approach filling it. So we said, oh, we can't do it. But that helped us to see that it just wasn't appropriate.
Something I didn't mention, which probably would have helped, and I find that this is probably a good example of what I was trying to say. So actually sitting with these questions, actually it's something I feel I could do more. These practical, I don't know what else to call it. Actually sitting with this and trying to, I don't know what I try to do when I sit with these practical issues. I don't know. But this is very present, so definitely I need to sit with this. It can even be answering an email and trying to find, yeah. Sit, I keep it on hold for a couple of hours or one day or whatever. Hopefully not too long, but actually sitting with this email, and what do I need to say? What is appropriate to say? How to say it? Even this afternoon, actually, a bit, I didn't actually like it. I didn't come here and sit, but I needed to make this update about the summer retreat. And okay, so what do I really want to say? What needs to be said, maybe? What needs to be said? And yeah.
Hi, everyone. I was wondering if there was a, if it could happen at some point that the forum is so different now here in the West than it is in Japan, that even if we are, even if it is the true expression of the Dharma, whatever, however you want to say it, that the dogma over there decides that this is no longer Zen and you are no longer affiliated with whatever lineage.
The dogma, you mean?
Oh, yeah, or this the ones who hold the original temple, let's say, or I don't know who could yeah say this is what the West has done is too different, too wild, not enough forms. I don't know.
Well, you know, if we, so then I hear what you say, and in a sense that the equivalent of the Vatican in Japan has already done that, you know, and if you don't come and practice in their monasteries for a certain amount of time and you don't have the right kind of papers, then you're not recognized. So that already is happening. They're also trying to make an effort to implant in Europe and have a group in Europe that will do that authorization according to European standards. But that's really short-sighted because actually, then, well, it came from China before it was in Japan, and it came, and before China, it was in India. So we go back to, you know, the ultimate authority is the Buddha. Well, no, the Buddha said the ultimate authority is you. So the authorization is you be true to you, and then you are true to what this practice is. But I hear what you say, and in a sense, that is, that's what the Japanese are trying desperately to hang on to. But it's always for, material reasons, wanting to keep power and money and centralized and things like that. But they're losing the battle, so. And so this can be a lesson to us to like, so as those women said, we don't need to plow the same field twice. So this is the way we did it, but that doesn't mean the next people have to do it that way. However, the essence must not be lost. But we do, it's very human to want to hang on to things and fix things and have them be always the same. Even, I had an absurd conversation with someone from Darty on the phone. Darty is this company, this store in France that sells appliances and, or, like, yeah, washing machines and dryers and televisions and computers and all this kind of thing. And this really absurd situation where she, we have like a special card with Darty, so we get free delivery and advantages or whatever. And I couldn't make it work while ordering online, so I called them and she said, it became clear to me that you can't use it online. You can only use it in the store or over the telephone. Okay, that's already kind of absurd, but then she tried to send me an email address so I could click on the link and confirm my purchase and everything. But she had the email address was hotmail.fr, and my address is hotmail.com. So clearly, the guy in the store, when we, put this whole thing in place, made a mistake, even though I told him the right thing. And she would not move from this thing. You can't have these advantages if you can't receive this by email. I'll try sending you a link by text message, which she did and didn't work. And I said, well, can't you just correct the email address? No, if I change the email address, then you'll lose all the advantages. Completely absurd. And when I just insisted, I said, listen, it's just the guy, the salesman in the store who made a mistake. He wrote FR instead of come, it's not a big deal, Finally, she left for about 5 minutes and came back and said, okay, I'll do it. But this is just to say, this is the kind of thing that we just get caught on. It has to be like this, it has to be done this way. Even though responding to the person who comes in the door, it doesn't make any sense to respond in that way. Now, I don't know if she thought I was like faking it and I was trying to use a different email. I wasn't really who I said I was. I don't know, because I had the right phone number, I had the right address and everything, whatever. But that's just an example of how absurd it is to hang on to things, to hang on to an idea, a position, a form, a rule, and not respond to just what is. And we know this very easily, so we're all now it's in summer mode, right? So everyone is dressed lightly and there's light outside. 2 months ago it was not like that, or even last week in France it was not like that. Debbie and Lisa have sun pouring in. Claudia has her curtains drawn. Last week she probably didn't need to draw her curtains because, it was raining or something, I don't know. We just respond very easily without becoming attached. Unless we start, when we start thinking, then we become attached and we want it to be a different way, and so we pretend it's a different way, or we refuse to let go of how it is, or of how we want it to be, or something. And yet it's really simple. It's really. That's the ordinary relax sharply. That is our Zen.
I missed the last word of what you said, the ordinary.
Ordinary, and that is our relax sharply. That
Sharply.
characterizes our Zen. I say our Zen, but just because that's what we're familiar with, that's the way that we practice. And that's also a characteristic of our lineage. Mizumi Roshi was not like Yasutani. He didn't say, no, you can't translate this. He himself translated the stuff into English with Bernie, They're the ones who translated all the chanting and all of that into English.
I think that is also you can see it in all these pictures that were in the presentation that Joa shared this weekend. I think it came from the same meeting from Zen River in particular, but it really shows some warmth. It shows the relaxation and also the sharpness. And you see it in Mizumi Roshi. Maybe I project this. Maybe, but I think I can see it. And all these people who later became his successors or not, all the other people I know, people I don't know. And yes, it feels very familiar in a way. So it's still a family. Just like.
Really beautiful. That's a really good point. And that was, 40 years ago, most some of that stuff, so. And the chanting is, the Japanese version of the Heart Sutra, but put to music by Tenke's Sangha. Tenke, who's like really attached to form and stuff, but they put their ceremonies to music, which is really innovative and beautiful. So if you haven't looked at it, if you didn't click on that link on WhatsApp, it's really beautiful to look at. And you can see Gen-O Roshi really young. Really, really young. And those of you who are not on WhatsApp, who is not on WhatsApp? Anna and Claudia, I guess. No. So you're not even aware of the fact that we've had a revolution on that WhatsApp group. We've returned to the initial purpose. So if you're interested in rejoining, Claudia, or Anna, if you want to join, and I encourage you. And everybody else, did you look at that video? That Mizumi Roshi video?
I did. I was also thinking of, although I need to look, maybe it was shared at some point. There is, I only know it. It's from a Dutch TV station, so it's subtitles are in Dutch, but you have the original English audio. It's a documentary. I think it's almost 1 hour about Maizumi Roshi, actually. But I'm not sure if that was shared at some point. I need to check. And I can.
Okay. Guess we can stop there. Thank you.
Roshi, can we just remind when we finish?
Let's maybe stop the recording first and.